What's up, everybody? This is Dave with Movies On Up. We'll see Ryan on the other side of the theme song. This week, we talk some news on Ricky Gervais, Aubrey Plaza, Jackie Chan, and Tom Hardy and some puppies. We also talk about the awesome Pacific Rim trailer, as well as some trailers for a bunch of sequels. And since this is our last episode ever, if the Mayans are right, Ryan gives his top five apocalyptic end of the world movies. I give my top five post-apocalyptic end of the world movies. Theme song, please save us.
What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 32, a comedy, or in this case, a comedic podcast, that's up for debate, about coming together alongside my co-host, Dave. This is a headline, or not a headline, a tagline ripped straight from a movie that he gushed about last week and I haven't seen.
That I love, and actually went and bought on Amazon to throw in the prize package for a film ball.
Which is only because, well, yeah, he was like, hey, you should, I got this for you. You should watch it. And I was like, thanks, Dave, but I already put it in my Netflix queue. Let's give it away to someone. So you can thank Dave for buying it, and you can thank me for being a generous
person.
Well,
no, the thing was, if Ryan would have borrowed it and I opened it, I was just going to order another one anyway.
Oh, well, so I guess don't thank me. Just thank Dave.
Yeah.
He was thinking about you guys, and I was just thinking about myself, as I usually do. If you're thinking about yourself and how you can get a sweet Movies On Up button, and they are pretty rad, or how you could get some kind of a prize pack from Dave and I, I'll tell you how you can do it. If you know the tagline that we just spoke of, a comedy about coming together, zip it off in an email to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet at Dave with the answer, @moviesonup, or you can get at us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/moviesonup. Let us know your guess if it is correct. If you are the first one, we'll say that, first one with the correct answer, we'll put a prize pack in the mail for you. We'll just have to get your post office box or your mailing address or what trading post you use, whatever. You don't expect me to actually segue into anything, do you?
You're king of segues.
Yeah.
Not still yet. Waiting for it. This week in box office. That's my segues. It's kind of hard to... it's a weird week.
I set the bar so high,
yeah,
haven't I? And we set the bar so high for The Hobbit, it just really didn't... It had a good week, but didn't
Here's
quite...
Here's the thing, is the December record for an opening was $77 million by I Am Legend. It would have been... by Return of the King, if Return of the King didn't open on a Wednesday. Because Return of the King made a shit ton of money in December. The Hobbit still made a shit ton of money.
Yay!
We set the over-under at 110.
Oh.
And we were... That was a little high because I had confidence in it. I think most people that do the projections were going in the 90 to 105 range. So yeah, I went a little high. It came in with $84.6 million. Which is still
a lot of money.
Still the highest opening in December.
Yay!
Ever. But it has that feeling to where it's like, why didn't it do as well as it should have? It only beat I Am Legend by 7 million. And you're looking, it opened on more screens. It had the benefit of some 3D.
IMAX.
It's years later, tickets are more expensive. So we really underperformed.
Kind of. And it's
hard to say.
Yes, that's what I was going to get at. What kind of expectations did we have that a movie makes $88 million in its first weekend, is the highest opening for this month ever, and it underperformed?
But I look at The Amazing Spider-Man over the summer. That made a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't think it was anywhere near what they wanted it to be. I mean, it made less in its first 6 days, including a holiday, than Avengers made in its first three. So, I mean, and it wasn't even close. So, I mean, they put such high expectations on these movies where a lot of money doesn't always mean... But here's the thing. Hobbit's going to be okay. It's going to be fine.
Like, yeah.
The thing is if it doesn't make $1 billion worldwide, then it's a failure. It's going to get there. It's going to be there. We might be overreacting. Now, if it comes out this week and has a 60% drop, then it might be in trouble. If you're looking at like 150 domestically, it might,
Well, do you think, was 100 the magic number? If it would have made 100, would that have all of a sudden, we would have looked at it differently and said, okay, success.
I think it needed to be closer to 100. I don't know if 100 exactly, but like in that 95 range, which I realize
closer
you're
to
only,
100 than 90.
I think okay. you realize we're only talking a $10 million difference, but $10 million is a lot of money.
It's 10% of 100.
And
yeah, it is.
What do we, you know, what's to blame for it? Is it the fact that the shorter book is over three movies? Are people not ready to commit to a 3-year saga right now?
I don't know about that. What I thought, maybe you heard it. I mean, it didn't stop me from going to see the movie, but I checked the Rotten Tomatoes score and the critics had it at like a 63%. It was, I mean, from the ones that I read, not very well liked amongst the critics, but you know, the masses, the common folk had it at 95%. And I think it's probably somewhere between the two. But I guess I kind of just felt like maybe it was early word was getting out that it wasn't as good as the other movies, and that's what maybe kept people away.
Which in that, I think, is where this weekend is telltale, because it's got a lot of competition. What's it going to do? I mean, you have a wave of new movies on Wednesday. You have a wave of new movies on Friday. How's it going to compete with those is the thing. And also, another thing I want to bring up, were there too many choices? As far as, did you have to think too much before you even bought a ticket?
You know what? I didn't, because where I went to see it, it was only, you can see it in 3D or you can see it in 2D. I didn't have the frame rate thing to think about. So I just said, well, all right, I want to see it at 1 o'clock.
Because were you 24 or 48?
I saw it at 24.
Okay. Do you think that would have turned some people off? People that... 48 frames per second, I think, was only in like 5% of the theaters that opened it.
It was in Pittsburgh. Like,
yeah. And do you think that turned a lot of people off, thinking they would wait until they could see it in 48 frames per second?
I don't think so. Maybe I'm a little bit of an outlier, but before I saw the movie once, I said, I'm going to see this twice. I'm going to see it in 24 locally because this is the time I have to go. This is when I'll do it. And then I'm going to go see it in 48 because, A, I love The Hobbit. I like it more than I like Lord of the Rings.
Are you still going to go see it twice now
that
you've seen it once?
Yeah, okay. I still am. Because I want to see the difference. And being able to compare it to, okay, I remember seeing it in, you know, 24 frames per second. Now I can look at it in 48 and really tell. Yeah, I'm absolutely going to see it again. But I don't know that there were a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people really cared that much. They were just like, yeah, if I want to see it, I'll see it. And it doesn't, however I can see, it'll be fine.
Yeah, but I mean, so that was, it's like I said, it's hard to consider it a failure when it brings in 80, just almost 85, but second place, Rise of the Guardians brought in another 7.1, Lincoln at number 3 brought in another 7 million, it's at 107 now, Skyfall fell to Earth at number 4 with 270, or it's at 271 million total, Life of Pi has been in 5th place for the last 3 or 4 weekends. And then Twilight finally fell down to 6th. Wreck-It Ralph still at 7. So, I mean, your top, you know, 6 or 7 movies. 7 movies.
Have been out, there for a while.
And take out Twilight, and they're cool. You know, there's solid stuff that's worth seeing.
Did you see Twilight? Do you know it's not worth seeing?
Do I need to see it to know it's not worth seeing?
I don't know. I'm asking the questions. That's what I mean. I ask the hard questions. The limited release, Save the Date, which you thought looked kind of cute.
Yeah, it was only on 2 screens, $3,700, so $1,800 per screen.
$1,800?
Yeah.
How about $1,800?
That works also.
or if we really need to put the point in there, because we are talking about such huge numbers. Anything else worth talking about?
Not really.
I mean, it's the usual suspects. The Hobbit made almost $90 million, and people were disappointed, so...
But here's the thing is, it seems everything I read, like, leading up to Friday, I just read headlines. I don't read actual reviews. Everything seemed...
Who has the time?
Well, I just don't care. Like, if I don't know you, I don't care about your opinion, really. So every headline seemed kind of negative, so I think that did detract some. But then being out in the public all weekend and talking to people who saw The Hobbit, generally seemed like... Oh, overwhelming people liked it.
Yeah.
Like it leaned more towards. So I wonder what word of mouth is going to do to it. If it's going to get a lot of those people that were hesitant to go out this weekend decide like, oh, maybe the critics are wrong and go. But I mean, what's it got to do this weekend to, I mean, does it have to be in that 50 range, that 40 range? How big of a drop can it?
Well, I mean, if it's already got to play catch up $20 million from this weekend, I think that, you know, it's only going to get worse. You know, every week, kind of the expectations are only, you're just going to get higher and higher to make up for the lost time from this week. Spent a lot of time talking about The Hobbit. I feel like the past couple weeks, we spent a lot of time talking about The Muppets. But that's cool, because I think we both like The Muppets. And when you get a little nugget like this, it made my day to see that from a cutting room floor cameo to the lead, Ricky Gervais in talks with Disney to play the human lead in The Muppets sequel. James Bobbin will return to direct the script that he co-wrote with Forgetting Sarah Marshall director Nicholas Stoller.
Who also co-wrote the first one.
Right. But I think adding Ricky Gervais, adding Ty Burrell, those are two like really, really funny, talented dudes, and I'm excited.
I like it a lot because Ricky Gervais is much of a like bad boy rep he gets for like what he does at the Golden Globes or anything. He's at the Golden Globes because he's relatively safe and he's likable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can see him making that turn, not necessarily that this turns into a turn, but I can see him making that Eddie Murphy type turn to where he just goes into family stuff.
He's done Sesame Street.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, this, him headlining this is awesome for him. And I think it's awesome for the sequel because I loved what Jason Segel did. I loved him in the first one.
Yeah.
Not having him, I don't think it hurts all that much because it's a Muppets movie, not a Jason Segel movie. So putting somebody like Ricky Gervais in a key role, the lead essentially, I think is awesome because he can do it. He's got that charm and he's got that charisma that he's fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think like, you know, kids are going to go see it because they want to see Kermit the Frog and they want to
see
this
Piggy.
Yeah,
they don't give a shit who Richard or fucking
Ricky Gervais is.
Ricky Gervais is.
Or
yeah.
Richard anybody.
I was thinking of his office character.
No. But I think, you know, for guys like us that, you know, like the Muppets when we were kids, we're going to go see it anyway. That's more for us. Like Jason Segel is one of us. And you know, Ricky Gervais is someone that, you know, the kind of the hipsters or whoever you want to call, like, you know, we'll go like late 20s, 30 somethings. We'll like, and that's really all this is. It's a guy that's going to be funny. He can be goofy. The kids will laugh at him, but, you know, the adults will like as well. So, and I think they've done that, you know, with every bit of casting they've done to this point is really got people that likable.
And even some of the cameos, like Sarah Silverman, not only cameoed, her cameo was in the trailer. And, like, she's not kid-friendly, but she's likable. She could pull it off. Like, I mean, she's in Wreck-It Ralph,
yeah,
for
I was
going to
say.
Like,
I mean,
so, I mean, they are finding these people that are just likable instantly.
Will appeal to the largest common denominator for this movie. And, yeah, I mean, I think I give Segel a lot of credit for getting the movie made and for the first one being, you know, as good as it was to get a second one. And, yeah, man, the way this keeps going, like, yeah, I'm already on board for a third one. I haven't even seen this just based off of who's going to
be involved. How many did we get in the 90s? They were coming out every few years.
Yeah, and I guess they progressively got worse, but, you know, to me, this sounds better than the first one, and I really like the first one.
It sounds different than the first one, different enough to not be the same thing without being Muppets in Space, you know, where it's not going too far out there.
Yeah. Speaking of people that maybe are more in the wheelhouse of, you know, your late 20s, your 30s, I think that would be squarely the demo that is a fan of Aubrey Plaza and maybe even John C. Reilly. They're going to see if there's life after Beth. It is the upcoming horror comedy flick written and directed by I Heart Huckabee's co-writer, Jeff Banna. Zomcoms, is that going to be kind of a thing now?
Probably. Cough button. I mean, Warm Bodies is coming out, and there's a few others, but I'm all for this because Aubrey Plaza needs to be leading lady.
Like, you like her a lot.
I like her a lot because she's really fucking good. Like, you watch her in even her part in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, she was really fucking good. Like, she carried Safety Not Guaranteed. Like, she went in there with a great cast and fucking stole the show. And then she's got the To-Do List next year, which I think is going to make her a star. I think she's going to make that transition from Thursday night NBC to headlining movies. So
yeah, I mean, I think this sounds not quite like Warm Bodies. It sounds more on the horror side of it. I think one of the article I read talked about it like more Shaun of the Dead, I guess. And I guess that just means that it is, I mean, Shaun of the Dead does function as a horror movie.
Yeah.
It just has comedy within it. And I guess that's maybe the direction they're going with this. Like, there is sort of a love story and there is comedy, but, you know, they're...
And John C. Reilly can do anything. Like, he's so good. He's on a hot tear. He's just so good in the past. His whole career, he's just nailed everything.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think they're likable. They're versatile. And yeah, I guess the zom-coms are here to stay, and that's okay. I mean, if I'm going to have to watch a romantic comedy, I might as well see somebody get their face eaten. I like that. Nobody's getting their face eaten in The Expendables 3. They may get their face blown off, but The Expendables, the second sequel, now has their token Asian. After Jet Li's departure, Jackie Chan to join the team for the third installment. Apparently, he was invited to be in The Expendables 2, but was too busy filming the Chinese Zodiac. He's spoken with Stallone about Expendables 3 being more of a buddy film. So this might signal the end of the franchise as we know it.
I mean, if it's a buddy film, it's a Stallone Statham buddy film, right? Jackie Chan's not going to weasel his way in there to second build.
I think he is, because he had said that he didn't want to just have like a real small cameo in Expendables 2. That's why he passed on the movie, because he wanted to have a much larger role. And if he's getting the larger role in this movie, it has to be a him. Maybe they're doing a buddy thing where it's Stallone and Statham and Jackie Chan. But I mean, this has always been an ensemble thing for the most part.
Couldn't you set up a storyline that takes place over in Asia somewhere, and you have Jackie Chan, and then you get all of these Asian-like kung fu and Asian action stars that haven't broke over here and have their own team that have to team up together?
I guess you could. I mean,
wouldn't that make... That would be interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting.
Like, what's that dude's name that goes crazy? Tony something?
Tony Jaa?
Tony Jaa, yeah. The kickboxing sweet elephant movie. Like, get him and get a couple of the other dudes that are doing stuff. I might actually watch that one.
Yeah, I don't know. Really, you can't come up with a premise that's way too out there for an Expendables movie. I'm going to be pissed if it's like Rush Hour but with Sylvester Stallone. I'm not going to like that. The thing that I liked is just packing as many recognizable guys into this cast and just watching them all kind of throw out cheesy one-liners and, like, you know, punch people until their face becomes soup. That's what I want. And I'm afraid that just because Jackie Chan wants to be involved and thinks that people still care whether he's involved, that he's going to kind of change the whole tone on something that's worked well enough to get, you know, a third movie out of the deal. Fox Searchlight may have found their leads for Animal Rescue. Roles have been offered to Tom Hardy and Nomi Rapace, with the script written by Dennis Lehane, the author of Gone Baby Gone, and some other Boston-centric flicks here recently. It centers around Hardy's character trying to go straight, but getting involved in a heist that ends up with a killing, and it somehow involves a pit bull. I didn't read the book, so I'm thoroughly confused.
I'm into it. I mean, yeah, obviously Tom Hardy, Noomi Rapace, I'm into it, but Dennis Lehane hasn't... A lot of his stuff's been adapted already into some quality movies. I don't think he's written a film yet, so I'm excited to see this. It's going to be depressing as hell, because that's generally how he writes. His shit's pretty dark, but it's cool, because Tom Hardy, you know, we talked earlier a few episodes ago how he's funding an animal trafficking movie with Tobey Maguire and Leo DiCaprio, so clearly he likes animals. And there's, if you Google Tom Hardy dog...
why wouldn't you?
There's an adorable picture of him like laying down on a puppy where he's just all handsome and the puppy's all cute. So, all right, give me a movie of that where he also kills some people in the process. I'm into it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he kills people or he kills the dog. Like, reading the synopsis.
Tom Hardy will not kill a dog.
Maybe Tom Hardy's character in a movie will kill. I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm confused. I like Tom Hardy. I like Lisbeth. So, yeah, what the hell? And I've really liked... Gone Baby Gone was really, really good. I still kind of try and stick up for Shutter Island occasionally. Maybe that's just because I like Scorsese quite a bit. But, I mean, I think it's been some interesting work, at the very least, some interesting stories. So, got reason to believe this one could be interesting as well. I don't think there will be too many pit bulls involved in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Maybe not a whole lot of James Franco being involved either. He says that he hasn't had any contact with the studio since Rupert Wyatt left the project. Apparently, there was a small scene that Franco had discussed at one point with Wyatt for Dawn. But the new director, Matt Reeves, may be going in another direction.
I'm fine either way. It's like Jason Segel with the Muppets. I thought Franco did well in the first one, but the second one's not a Franco story. His character has served his purpose. He doesn't need to be there.
Doesn't need to be wrapped up, though. Have some kind of sensible, not just like...
And that's why one scene I think would be cool.
Yeah.
Whether it's just a fallout, because he's responsible for this. People are going to find out, you know, and then... Or even a scene with him and Caesar. So I'm fine with him not coming back, though, because at this point, it's not about him. It's about the apes. And if he were to sign on to star, then you would be trying to pigeonhole him and him into a story that he doesn't necessarily need to be in.
Yeah, I think that people, even with the last movie, were under the misconception that that was a James Franco movie, because it wasn't. It was an Andy Serkis movie.
Yeah, and see, I don't even think it was, because James Franco, it wasn't really marketed as a James Franco movie. No, I heard about the movie for months before I even knew Franco was in it. And he's a big time, I mean, he's an Oscar nominee, so... It's a Serkis movie, and if Serkis wasn't coming back for the second one, I really don't have any interest.
Right.
Franco not being in the second one, I don't care, because I don't need anything else from that.
I just feel like they really should, you know, do that storyline justice and wrap it up some way. It doesn't have to be very much.
But it depends on how long afterwards is it. I mean, it's something you could wrap up in a headline, like in a flat in a montage with the headline saying what happens to his character. I mean, it's... I don't think it's anything you have to see.
No, I guess not. But that brings you back to the whole, like, does this character, you know, die off screen and shit like that. I don't like when that happens.
I'm fine with that.
It aggravates me. I thought, you know, their relationship was, you know, a very strong point in the first movie.
And I thought that was explored well.
I
thought it reached its peak. Like, I don't know what to explore their relationship again. I don't need that, because it reached their point where there was love. Caesar had some regret, but then he made that decision and he went with it. I don't need to see it come back.
I feel like there just needs to be that, and maybe I didn't feel that there was enough there when he just kind of goes back up with the rest of the apes. I didn't think there was a strong enough no, like, shit's different now. Like, now I'm killing all of you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get that from their interaction. And I'm not saying that, you know, Caesar needs to bash his head in with a rock, but I think there just needs to be something more to really just put back that this relationship, the one he had, is over and it's done. But maybe we'll get it, maybe we won't. Maybe it's just kind of Franco reaching out to the studio saying, hey, I'd like to be involved. Somebody just,
because it was good, he was good.
Yeah,
like, it was done well. But
and that's just why I hope that they just do this well, because the first movie was good. And I'd like them to give just kind of a subtle nod to it and then move on.
Because I do have bigger fears about the second one, because it's a different story to tell, and it's a harder story to tell, where the apes have to be 80% of it.
Yeah.
Where in the beginning, the apes were 10% of it. So it's a different shift, and how do you make that work? So good luck, Matt Reeves.
May the force be with you. Good luck to Vin Diesel. Apparently he needs some work, and apparently Kojak needs a big screen adaptation. It's getting some good writers, though. The Skyfall co-writers, Neil Purvis and Robert Wade, they've also done some other Bond stuff that was maybe not quite as impressive, but they've signed on to script an adaptation of the 70s New York TV detective played by Telly Savalas.
No, I mean,
he's a bald guy.
He's a bald guy with a gruff voice.
Yep.
Which is what Vin Diesel is.
Right.
Even if this, is there any way this isn't just a beat up people action movie? Even though that's never what Kojak was, can Vin Diesel make a movie that's not that right now?
I can't answer that question for you. I mean, I don't think this will be very good. They just tried the Kojak reboot on TV with Ving Rhames. That didn't work.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Exactly. That's my point. nobody cared about it for free on TV. I don't think people are going to line up to see a Vin Diesel version.
Especially if it's not a punch people in the face movie.
Yeah, yeah, maybe especially if it's not, but... Because
like a younger Vin Diesel, like Boiler Room days, before he blew up into this meathead like typecast, I could see it being interesting. But at this point, I don't.
Yeah, I'm just going to pass on it completely. Eddie Redmayne's career may be on the ascent as he is close to a deal to appear in the Wachowskis' next film, Jupiter Ascending. Pretty impressive cast, already includes Mila Kunis and C-Tates. It'll be the first straight-up sci-fi flick from the Matrix creators since The Matrix.
He's one of those that we talked about a couple weeks ago. The Lee
you
Pace.
Really like this kid.
I think he's going to be big. I think he's going to have a good career. And I don't know how I feel about the Wachowskis right now because I had the doubts about Cloud Atlas, and that didn't shut any of those doubts up. I don't know what they're capable of right now.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to see Cloud Atlas so before I really make up my mind about that. I mean, obviously, I really didn't care for Speed Racer.
Yeah.
And I really didn't care for the last two Matrix movies either.
But, I mean, C-Tates, it's hard to find somebody hotter right now because he had...
You mean more attractive, right?
No, there's more dudes. There's dudes slightly more attractive than him.
Well, there's
we already talked about
there's
one.
Our list for next year. Eddie Redmayne?
No.
Tom Hardy,
but,
of course.
Yeah, like, after his 2012, like... He's bringing people into the theaters. So he has three legitimate hits under his belt just in 2012. Like, he has $300 million movies, which is impressive. And they scanned the whole year almost, spanned the whole year. So it could be a return for them. I don't know what they have left.
Well, I mean, if this is more of a sci-fi movie, less of a concept movie, maybe if that's what Cloud Atlas was, it's maybe a bit too high concept for people to get. You know, if it's just more sci-fi action, which is kind of what The Matrix did well. There were some special effects. It was a story that, for the most part, you could kind of understand. And, you know, it was Keanu Reeves shooting and karate chopping.
It's almost like they let the scope of what they do get too big.
It's possible.
Because The Matrix on its own is a good standalone movie,
yeah,
but a terrible trilogy. They tried to make it too big.
I'd agree with that.
Speed Racer. They were already talks of a Speed Racer franchise, a Racer X spinoff movie. Cloud Atlas feels like they just tried to do too much. So it's just like, dial it back a little bit. Focus on a movie. Make a great movie. Don't focus on building a universe within a two-hour window.
Maybe don't try and set yourself up for a trilogy before you get the first movie out and people decide if that's good or not.
They're not the only ones to blame for that now. But
no, I mean, there's other people doing it. Perhaps, I'm sure you would say, Mark Webb might be guilty of doing it. The cast is rounding out for his Amazing Spider-Man 2. Some of these things happened a while ago, but I'm not sure if we've actually talked about them, so I wanted to put them in there. Jamie Foxx confirmed as Electro. He was kind of campaigning for the role a couple months ago when we talked about it. Dane DeHaan as Harry Osborn, and Shailene Woodley will be Mary Jane. We did mention that. They'll be joining Andy Garfield and Emma Stone in that flick.
I really like Woodley as Mary Jane. I've gushed about her before. I think she's really, really talented, and she's another one she's a future leading lady. Like, she's got it, and I think Mary Jane's a good role for her. I just wish I cared about this franchise right now. I didn't particularly like Garfield as Spider-Man. I thought he did well enough, but I don't see him as the role. And as much as I love Emma Stone, I just couldn't get into anything about anything in the first movie.
What about Jamie Foxx as the villain, though?
I'm okay with that because that's interesting to me.
Me too. That's what I was trying to, like, does that maybe give you a little bit extra to, hey, you know, maybe this could be cool. There were
not
things
if he's dealt with like the Lizard was, though.
Well, and I don't know if that's exactly what they're going to do, but...
Because the Lizard could have been interesting, and he was boring. They did nothing good with the Lizard. So, like, to take the risk with that kind of villain and then not do anything with them was like, why? So I'm interested in the choice because I think Fox will do it. I think he'll nail it, but I don't think he's going to have much to work with.
Well, maybe not. There's not, you know, a lot from the villain standpoint from the first movie that would make you think that the second will be better. But maybe they'll take that as, you know, okay, this was a big criticism we had in the first movie, so let's try and address that going forward. And you know, maybe they will. We'll have to wait to find out for sure. We'll find out for sure on July 26th whether or not The Wolverine is any good. That is, of course, its release date. There is a complete international schedule that's been released. It kind of reads like a tour poster. Shows you all the countries and when it's going to be rolling out. Anytime between July, August, and I think into September for some countries as well.
They also released a poster.
It was a poster, yeah.
Actually, if you Google Tom Hardy puppy, not just the one picture I referred to earlier comes up, but a bunch of cute pictures of him with puppies. But, yeah, Wolverine released a really cool poster.
That if you Google Wolverine poster, you'll probably
it'll
find,
come up.
Yeah, okay.
I think it'll be good. I really do. There's been, it's been a long time coming. The director they're with isn't my top choice out of the ones that came before him, but everybody seems to be into it. I think it'll be all right. I'm just worried what Days of Future Past will do to
that,
potential sequels.
The Wolverine, yeah. Well, I guess it's really not going to matter because, you know, after this Friday, as we're recording, it is 12/21/12. That's the end of the world. So it doesn't matter. If you haven't seen The Hobbit, you know, get to see it before Friday or just don't worry about it. Don't worry about Wolverine, Justice League, Avengers, Star Wars. None of that shit's going to happen because we're all going to be dead. So in celebration of that, Dave and I put together a couple different top five lists. I took top five movies that involve the end of the world or the end of humanity. And Dave got the optimistic side of that, and he did post-apocalyptic movies. So if pockets of humanity are able to survive, you know, these are movies that, and I'm just guessing, I haven't seen his list. He did tell me I was going to get angry a couple times, but this was my idea. I was going to be the pessimist. We're all going to die for the most part. And Dave was going to be the little seed there, the optimistic seed, because that's what we give you.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. But I tell you what, I'll go first with my first "We're All Gonna Die" movie.
Was there any particular criteria you had for yours?
Well, I didn't go. There was a couple people that were kind of doing the zombie apocalypse. I didn't do that.
That was also one of my criteria. No zombie movies.
Yeah, I'm just gonna double check. I don't think I have any zombie movies. No, most of these are either man-made destruction. The first two definitely are, and then I think the last three are more natural disasters type things. But yeah, for the most part, at some point, the Earth had to be pretty well devastated. That was kind of my criteria. The first one is from 1964, and if you haven't seen it, this is going to be maybe a bit of a spoiler that the world gets destroyed at the end of it. But it's called Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop, whatever, and Love the Bomb. Stanley Kubrick, really, really a dark comedy. And I think that this is kind of the sort of dark comic opinion of what everyone thought the world was going to end during the Cold War. It's, you know, we all thought, well, by we, I mean the people that were alive. Dave and I weren't because we're young dudes. How those people would have thought the world was absolutely going to end with us nuking the Ruskies or the Ruskies nuking us, or both doing it at the same time. It's just kind of, it's one of those, I don't know how you could really deal with this today. People wouldn't care. But I think in 64, the fact that he was able to kind of make light of the whole situation and just like the final 2 minutes of the movie, just they were all getting blown up, but it kind of makes you smile.
And I totally would do that. I mean, it's an iconic scene that
yes.
You've probably seen posters or pictures of it, even if you don't know it's from Dr. Strangelove. It's one of the most iconic shots in film history, which I would do if I were in that situation.
Yeah, I mean,
what's it matter? Who cares?
Exactly. Like, we're all going to go. That's, I think it's kind of like a, I wanted to call it patriotic, but I don't think it is. I think it's tongue-in-cheek, like, dumb Americans. Of course you would do this. But at any rate, it'll put a smile on your face as, you know, everyone's dying. Spoiler alert. So, Dave,
I had post-apocalyptic, so remember that as we go back and forth. My criteria, because you think of post-apocalyptic movies, a lot of them are zombie movies. I didn't want to do that. That's for another time. I didn't do outbreak movies like something like Carriers or something where it's an illness that destroyed everything. And I didn't do movies leading up to the apocalypse or anything that was like flashback-based, like a 12 Monkeys, where some of it was post-apocalyptic, or even Terminator 2. Like, I wanted just movies that take place in a post-apocalyptic world. Number 5 is going to make Ryan mad and happy at the same time, okay, because for post-apocalyptic movie, I went the 70s. You had Soylent Green in 1973, Logan's Run in 1976, The Omega Man in 1971, and Mad Max in 1979. There's another one from 1975 that might be left off. It might show up later. So, I mean, that you think of post-apocalyptic movies, Logan's Run and Soylent Green are two of the first ones that come up. Omega Man is, you know, it's one of the first ones that come up.
I may have a movie from the 70s that stars a guy from a couple of your movies there that I'll talk about next.
Yeah, so I mean, it's 70s was really, really, and this isn't like one of my regular lists where it's like all movies from 2000 beyond. There's really only...
I have quite a few. 2007, 2011, 2009.
Of my top 5, 2 of them are later than 2000. So you figure that's 4 in the 70s right there. 70s was a really good post-apocalyptic decade for the movies. Because these aren't just good post-apocalyptic movies. These are classic movies. And yeah, the Mad Max, I think the first one is the weakest one. But I had to throw it on there because Road Warrior was in the 80s.
Yeah.
But it kicked it off. And I think Road Warrior and Beyond Thunderdome are really good post-apocalyptic movies. Mad Max tried to be. I just think it hadn't caught up to itself yet.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I see why you thought I'd get mad because you...
Who's starring in the Mad Max remake?
I don't know.
I hope he has a puppy.
Yeah. Is it Eddie Redmayne? My number 4, this is going to make Dave mad, and it's also maybe going to make Dave happy, because it's actually 2 movies. It's from the same franchise, from 1968, Planet of the Apes, and from 1970, Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Now I'll tell you, after I say spoiler alert, if you haven't seen these movies, what the hell are you doing? But, if you haven't seen these, shame on you, put on your Princess Leia earmuffs. Essentially, humanity is all but extinguished in Planet of the Apes, as you find out at the very end when Chuck Heston goes, "You maniacs, goddamn you!"
But wouldn't that be more of a post-apocalyptic?
Maybe.
Because it's already happened.
But
Beneath.
This is why I put Beneath.
Yeah.
Because if there's any doubt, Chuck takes care of it. Very short cameo in this movie. I think
Beneath
he's only...
Was that the fourth?
Second.
That was the second? Okay.
Yes. Okay, if you haven't seen Beneath the Planet of the Apes, stop listening, because I'm going to ruin the movie for you. But I've given you enough time. You know, give me about a minute and a half, and then you can jump back in. Heston essentially blows up the Planet of the Apes. He detonates a nuclear bomb at the end of that movie. And it was at his own insistence, because he wanted to try and stop future shitty sequels. Like in real life, IRL, so to speak. Obviously, that didn't happen, because we did get quite a few more shitty movies and a TV series that spun off of that as well. But yeah, that's why I wanted to put a Planet of the Apes and the actual apocalypse, I guess, sort of happens in Planet, but definitely happens in Beneath. So between the two, destruction.
For my number 4 post-apocalyptic movie, most recent movie on my list, I went all the way back to 2009 for The Road. Viggo Mortensen, Cody Smith McPhee. Based off the Cormac McCarthy novel. Awesome. It was super well done. It was acted perfectly. The ending was heartbreaking and uplifting. Like, it just such a good movie. It was good the whole way through. It was just put together well. It was a hard novel to adapt because of how it's written, but they pulled it off.
Agreed. Great movie. You know what? You like that a lot. I think you happen to like my next movie, too. It's from 2007. It's Sunshine. Danny Boyle essentially starts the movie with the world ending, kind of. It's on a slow burn, so to speak. Cillian Murphy and Chris Evans, along with a crew of astronauts, have to deliver a bomb to the center of the sun to kind of restart the nuclear processes there and save what is a freezing Earth. It gets a little maybe Space Odyssey-y towards the end, but I think it wraps up kind of memorably. I think that's safe to say. And this is kind of where my movies get a little bit newer and they get a little more towards, you know, us not destroying ourselves. But good movie, great sci-fi movie, and has to do with the end of the world.
And it's one of my favorite movies ever, like probably top three ever. And it, I guess I never really considered it apocalyptic because they might save it at the end. Like, I didn't see it as the world ending. I see it as the world dying and trying to save it. But that's Chris Evans' performance in that movie is so fucking good. I used to hate Chris Evans. He was just this punk kid that was just arrogant in every role. And then that role, I'm a huge Chris Evans fan because of that movie. And my number three kind of went a little out there. I went Down There also from a little film from 1985 made in New Zealand called The Quiet Earth.
You know what? I haven't seen that one, but I did run across it on a couple lists as I was kind of looking for some ideas here.
It's really good and really interesting because it takes, I mean, the large part of it at first is the one guy. Like, it has an I Am Legend type feel. There's a movie before it that it's kind of an unofficial remake of. It takes a lot of elements from your earlier 70s post-apocalyptic classics, but it puts a spin on it, and it just, how crazy do you go when you're the only person left? And there's a cross-dressing scene that's pretty funny. It's just because nobody's around. Who cares what he does? And then how does that change when you realize, oh, there are a couple other people around? So it's really fucking cool movie. Mind-twisty ending to where you don't, it's really left open for a lot of shit, but it's really good. I really, really like this movie. Yeah, The Quiet Earth from 1985.
Okay. My next one is from 2011. It's Melancholia. If there's one thing that I can say, make whatever sounds you want. If there's one thing I can say about Lars von Trier, the guy does no visuals. He does manage to make the end of the world look beautiful. Like, I want to watch that. I want to go there. And I actually thought that Kirsten Dunst was pretty good as kind of a nutbag throughout the entire movie. But at the end, she's kind of the only one that has it together. And, you know, I think if spoiler alert, the world ends. But, you know, if this is how, you know, we're all going to bite it this weekend, I think I'm going to do what they did in this movie.
I fucking hated this movie. This was,
I know you did,
my least favorite movie of last year. If it were just the second half, I wouldn't hate it nearly as strong. If you take out that first hour and a half that really has nothing to do with anything that takes place in the last part of the movie, I'd probably be a lot more into it. But it just seemed the first like hour and a half was just von Trier smelling his own farts. And I didn't give a shit. And by that point, I was so angry at everybody involved with this movie that I wanted the fucking world to end just so I didn't have to watch any more of this.
It does take a while to get going.
Like 2 hours, because the first hour and a half has nothing to do with the fucking movie. Hey, let's take these characters that are in this movie and put them in a different scenario that has nothing to do with what's going to happen later.
No, I mean, I can't really defend why he did what he did, but I think that the parts that deal with the apocalypse, I think, are very good. And is this one of my top five movies ever? No.
And that's what I mean. That last half, the second act, if it stood on its own, I would agree that it's not just a good post-apocalyptic or a good apocalyptic movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
But just everything to get to it.
Yeah, no, I understand. But that's just what I'm saying. The way he dealt with the apocalypse, I felt like it earned a place on my list just because of that. So that's where I'll leave my number two.
Yeah, Melancholia is a number two, so that makes sense. My number two, we brought it up on a list. I don't remember how long ago. We did a list of movies we wanted to see remade. This was near the top of my list from 1975. A Boy and His Dog. Don Johnson joint about him hanging out with his dog in this post-apocalyptic world and then running into some
communicating
people.
Communicating with this dog.
Yeah, and then meeting the girl, meeting her people. Really good, really dark, especially the ending. Like, it's just a fucking good movie. Like, it's just really good. And
do you think
I,
this movie could be remade with Tom Hardy?
He's too old, I think. You need
to just be like a man and his dog, right?
No. He would. If Tom Hardy were put in the same situation at the end, he would make the same choice. But it's such a good movie. I do wish this movie would be remade because it is a good movie. It is a story that would translate to now. Whether they keep the ending or not, I don't know if they could get away.
I think they'd have to.
You'd have to keep the ending, but I don't. It's so good, though. I love this movie.
And anybody that's seen the movie, like, that's what you talk about with this is, oh, my God, that's the guy from Miami Vice, and oh, my God, the ending. That's
a
what
good
you
movie.
Get. Maybe
it's
not
really
necessarily in
movie.
That order, but yeah, it's definitely worth checking out if you haven't. My number one movie about the apocalypse comes from 2009, and it is 2012. Kind of, how could you not have this at number one? They made sure they released it in plenty of time so that you could see it in the theaters, you could buy it on DVD before we all do die in 2012. It's a good way to capitalize on the future Mayan predictions. The special effects are actually really, really well done. You can, and I think it was better. There's better acting in it than there needed to be in a movie about the end of the world. Some of the more realistic, scenes of things that you know blowing up and crumbling. If you haven't seen it, you can check it out on FX on 12/21/12 as we're all checking out. So that'd be a way to go.
Are they playing it for 24 hours?
They're playing it at 8, and they're playing it at midnight. So, I mean, I think we're all supposed to die at midnight.
What time zone? Or is it
Mayans, Central Standard Time? I don't know. You'll know when it happens, Dave. It won't matter. You'll know. That's why I guess they're playing it. Just in case, like, it's early, earlier than 12 Eastern, you know, you can be watching it. And if it's later than 12 Eastern, you know, a couple hours, grace period here or there. But, yeah.
My number one, it's one of my top three movies of all time.
This is why I gave you post-apocalyptic, so you could talk
about it. He actually brought
up
this movie. You could do this list so you can gush about this movie. Children of Men. Because it was a post-apocalyptic world for a very unique reason, for like a very interesting reason, and a real reason that you think about and think, wait, is that possible? Because it seems believable enough, and the way the world deteriorated seemed believable enough. Like, it wasn't any natural nuclear fallout. It was just a freak nature of science thing that happened that nobody could explain. And I like that they never bothered to try to explain it. That's a lot of, like, zombie movies. You don't have to explain why they're zombies.
The situation is what it is.
Yeah. I don't give a shit why. So just do it. And this didn't never really try to explain why. And then it had that sliver of hope that maybe we're there, you know? So, plus Clive Owen's so good. Chiwetel's in it. Chiwetel Ejiofor. Julianne Moore and her screen time is good. Like, the cast is fucking awesome. Michael Caine, I still cry. He has one scene in that movie that still makes me cry when I watch it. I've seen it hundreds of times. Such a good movie.
It's a good movie. Regardless of the genre, it's a good movie. You should check it out. Do it before the 21st. Because, like I said, if you don't want to do it, if you do anything after, it won't matter.
Did you have any honorable mentions?
No, I didn't put any honorable mentions on there.
I even though I said it didn't count, I put 12 Monkeys as an honorable mention just because I think it's a good movie.
Yeah,
but
it's good. It's cool.
Doomsday. We talk about Neil Marshall a lot. It's just fun.
Like, it's like a newer Road Warrior, I
feel.
Yeah,
it's like a Mad Max-esque movie.
Right.
And then Blindness.
I didn't see that one.
Really? Blindness is such a good fucking movie with Julianne Moore and Mark Ruffalo. Fantastic movie. It's similar to Children of Men, where just a freak nature, like, everybody just loses their eyesight. So that's what happens. So
I have to see it quickly.
Yeah. And an offshoot, a bonus watch it now that I'm going in the TV range, a British TV series from a few years back called Survivors. Only 2 seasons of it, 6 episodes each. It's on Netflix Instant. Fucking phenomenal show.
You know what? I'll give you a bonus. Maybe this is a like a book, or an honorable mention, I guess. It was originally made for TV. It was ABC, The Day After, which was the height of the Cold War about, you know, what would happen if we did get nuked. And they've kind of put it together. I think you can find it on Netflix, or you can find it Amazon, wherever. But that's kind of the quintessential, if you talk to your parents. I'm sure they'll mention this. So, yeah.
But Survivors, it sadly got canceled without them knowing. So the end of the second season really gets you pumped for the third season. Just really fucking good show.
I will have to say that you got me really pumped about our first trailer. I think it might have been Wednesday. It was usually in that black day where the podcast goes up and I don't want to hear anything about the podcast for another couple of days. But you were like, dude, Pacific Rim trailer is awesome. You've got to watch it. And I did in my car today. That's about the first time that I was willing to put a little bit into this podcast again. I'm glad I did watch it because it did look pretty neat. You know, we got a little bit of a taste of the monsters from the teaser that we watched a week or so ago. We got to see the big robots that they're going to use to fight these monsters in this one. It got, being a child of the 80s, I like me some Voltron as much as the next guy. And this did have a little bit of a Voltron Force feel to it as they were getting all suited up, getting these big robots.
I think it looks amazing. And for this kind of movie, if it were any other director other than Del Toro, I probably wouldn't be into it. But it's not going to be just... it's not going to be...
Robot monster punch
just
punch,
robot
kick.
Monster punch movie. Yeah. So, yeah. I was looking for the actual text that I sent you because I didn't go like, oh, Pacific Rim, you got to watch it now, blah, 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 blah,
blah. You
didn't
say now?
My exact text... Pacific Rim trailer, my God.
Okay, well, what is, I mean, come on. That's pretty like.
No, I was blown away by it. I love right. it. I got pumped. I got excited. I love Charlie Hunnam, his Jax Teller voice. Like, he has one American accent, and that's all he does. But whatever, it's going to work for this. It looks good. It looks really fucking good.
It looks good.
It looks really fucking good. It looks like Robot Jocks meets Godzilla, which is the worst way to describe a movie, but it looks fucking good.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, I think at the very least, it'll make you want to see the movie in 3D. I think so. What about, did it make you want to see it in 3D?
Makes me want to see it in 2D. Okay.
You don't care. The next trailer I feel like we could have got a false start penalty on. We talked about this when it was supposed to come out, and then... for whatever reason, and we talked a lot about that reason, G.I. Joe got pushed from this year to next year.
From June of this year. Yes. From a prime summer weekend where Ted moved into the spot vacated and made $200 million. So
yeah, I'm not saying, I don't think you're saying either that G.I. Joe would have made that.
No, but it
right
was
there,
a prime but, location that right. they bumped.
But they've recut together a new trailer for G.I. Joe 2 Retaliation. It's a lot of stuff that we saw from the original trailers that came out in the Super Bowl time last year with a bit more Channing Tatum, a bit more with the fake president.
And they cut out the scene. They cut out the shot of dead Channing Tatum. They cut out that shot and then added some more scenes of alive Channing Tatum. And then they used Bruce Willis a lot more, where in the original trailer, he was kind of used at the end as like a wow moment.
Yeah.
He's kind of utilized through the whole thing, so...
And I think at this point, like, people didn't know maybe that he was in the movie at that until the very end of the trailer. Like, oh, that's cool.
But now they know.
It's been around for so long.
So, yeah. So I mean, you're relying on Channing. It seemed like there was less The Rock.
Less Rocky?
Where the first one was all The Rock.
Well, really, that's all you had. Because yeah. you had a floating Channing Tatum. You can't really talk about Bruce Willis till the very end of it. So, Ray Park?
Yeah, which, and you know what? I've heard a lot of this was post-converted. I've heard the scene that the trailer opens with.
Yeah.
Snake Eyes on the side of a mountain. Mm-hmm. I've heard that's some of the best post-conversion 3D ever. That they're actually putting the time and money into making the post-conversion look good, and it feels like a summer movie. It really does.
Yeah,
but it's a March
movie.
It was going to be. It's a March movie now, so I still don't really care. I still haven't watched the first one.
No, I haven't either, but this at least this trailer makes me think, oh, I could see this movie. The trailer for G.I. Joe, no. I knew instantly I don't want to see
that. G.I. Joe I want to watch because of how bad it is. This, I don't get that same feeling. This, I feel like, if I just want to watch a dumb action movie, I'll put it on.
Yeah, fair enough. You definitely want to see the next one, though. It was a teaser last week for Star Trek Into Darkness, and if you saw The Hobbit in 48 frames per second, you got the big 7 minutes of Star Trek. If you just saw it like the normal people, like I did, you just got the full trailer for Star Trek, which you can now watch on the internets. It's a good trailer.
And this, yeah, it's really good trailer, and this really hit on what we said about the teaser. Teaser didn't focus on any of the supporting cast. Well, now you see them all. Now they made it a point to put a shot of everybody in there. It was a lot less heavy on Cumberbatch, so you really didn't focus on him a lot, leaving him, you know, for the movie. I just think it's going to be great. Some of the shots just in the trailer, I think Abrams, he has a fantastic eye. Like, he really does. I think he can make some gorgeous shots, and this is a perfect universe to do that in. So, I mean, some of the shots in the trailer are just, like, I love what he does with a camera, so...
Yeah, I mean, my only concern, at least from the trailer, was it looked like, you know, kind of a good sci-fi action movie, not necessarily a Star Trek movie. Although this trailer,
see, I don't care about Star Trek, so I like.
I don't really either.
I like sci-fi action movies, so.
But I mean, at least this trailer did look like there was a bit more of the actual. Hey, they're all on a ship, like that's what they do, and there was a bit more. I guess maybe the Enterprise was a character that I didn't feel was featured as much in the teaser. It gets a little more play here. Our next trailer, we only put it on because of the name. It's
best title in the history of movies.
Go ahead, Dave.
Haunting in Connecticut 2: The Ghosts of Georgia.
That's right. The sequel to Haunting in Connecticut, and I use sequel in air quotes, doesn't take place in Connecticut, takes place in Georgia.
Why are you calling it Haunting in Connecticut?
Because that's such a bankable movie name, I guess.
Haunting in Connecticut wasn't a massive hit. Why not call it Haunting in Georgia? Fucking, Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia. So it's the Haunting out of Connecticut. Or Haunting not in Connecticut 2. We're in Georgia now.
I was willing to think, okay, maybe there was I've seen Haunting in Connecticut. Well, maybe there's a character named Georgia from that movie.
Oh,
maybe
Jesus.
It's not the Georgia state. Nope, it is.
No, and it's one of those, it's probably direct to DVD sequel, I would assume. It's gotta be. It's one of those where, oh, it takes place in Georgia, so everybody has to have a really bad Southern accent.
Oh, and they do.
Would you go to Georgia? Not everybody has a Southern accent. And if they do, it's not a really bad Southern accent. It just, everybody in the trailer has a really bad Southern accent. It's fucking called The Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia. What the fuck? Have we just given up completely on just titling movies?
Yes. And that's really all we have to say about that one. It's not a good trailer either. It's just, it's funny. It's out there. You know, watch it if you...
No,
you know.
I didn't even finish it. I was browsing the internet while we were watching. Like, it's a traditional...
I finished it. Watch it if you want.
It's the cliche, okay, we're going to have a slow build-up. There's going to be some. And then for the last 30 seconds, we're just going to throw a bunch of shit at you. Like,
that's going to make you jump. It's going to be loud noises.
Fuck you, movie.
Whatever. There were a couple trailers that just somehow, from maybe not doing trailers or... We haven't talked about. They've been out for
a
while.
They both came out in October when we focused on horror movie stuff.
Okay.
And we didn't talk trailers at all.
That makes sense. So now seems like a good a time as any to talk about them. Because if we don't talk about them now, we're all going to die. So we'll never have been able to give you our thoughts on the Iron Man 3 trailer. Which actually I think is a good trailer.
It looks really fucking
yes.
good. From the trailer, it looks like 2 hours of Iron Man getting his shit kicked in.
Yep.
It looks like a really dark, just... dark superhero getting his ass kicked movie.
And I'm glad you said that because it does look, you know, okay, how do we reboot or how do we tell a new superhero story now? Oh, we just make a dark version of that. They haven't done that really in the first two Iron Man movies. This is the one where it's like, oh, like he's got some problems as a human being. So, and that's always been something that's been an attractive point mm-hmm. about Tony Stark.
It looks very black in tone. Shane Black.
Oh, well done. But yeah, the trailer for Iron Man 3 at least does seem like it's going to redeem 2. And you get a...
Hopefully. I mean, we're putting a lot of hopes on one trailer, but
well, yeah.
It looks really good.
And that's all we have to go on right now, but it does look good. To get in the Christmas spirit, we might as well talk about the trailer for A Good Day to Die Hard, the latest in the Die Hard series. I believe the next five, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like a Die Hard trailer, kind of.
No, it looks like post with a vengeance Die Hard trailer. Like, Die Hard was so good because it had a good story and it was rooted in reality. Die Hard 2 sucked because it was the same movie, just in a different setting. 3 was good because it was still rooted in reality, but they upped it just a little bit on the ridiculous scale. But it still had that realism feel. 4, they just said, fuck it, we're just going to make a ridiculous action movie. That's what they did. And then this just looks like another one.
It's like a buddy-buddy, father-son action movie, which you don't even really see too much of. Is it Jai Courtney?
Yeah.
You don't really see too much of him in the trailer, do you?
No.
I didn't think so.
It looks like a sequel to Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't say it looks like a Die Hard sequel. It looks like a sequel to Live Free or Die Hard.
Which was a Die Hard sequel, but whatever.
Yeah.
We're splitting hairs because Bruce Willis is bald. Those movies not coming out for a while. If the world doesn't end, there will be a couple movies that come out on Wednesday, and even more that come out on Friday. Kind of a big big week for wide releases. Wednesday, The Guilt Trip and Monsters, Inc. 3D. I guess limited release would be Zero Dark Thirty on Wednesday and Amour.
Yeah, Zero Dark Thirty is only in 5 theaters. And is it me, or does The Guilt Trip look really fucking good?
It's you.
I think it looks fucking great. I love Seth Rogen, and I think it looks like Streisand like brings it and understands what she's doing. Like, it doesn't look like Streisand trying to like class up this movie. It looks like she's in on it, and it looks like she just brings it. I think it looks fucking great. I think a lot of the jokes in the trailers are really fucking good. Like, I don't know. I'm excited for it. I think Rogen's going to be awesome. I don't expect it to make a lot of money, but I think I'll enjoy it a lot.
Okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You can like it, and you've got your opportunity to see it on Wednesday if you so choose.
And I wish Zero Dark Thirty was still opening wide, because I really want to fucking see that movie.
You and your fantasy film ball team as well. On Friday, we've got the Tom Cruise action movie Jack Reacher. The Cirque du Soleil movie is coming out, and then the 3D spectacle that it will be. This is 40. The Impossible, which is supposed to be really, really, really good.
Yeah.
That's only on 14 screens, so that kind of sucks. Not Fade Away and the Double Handy movie On the Road finally makes its debut, so you can see Kristen Stewart jack off a couple dudes.
Like, there's a lot out there.
Yeah.
I mean, just from this week, you got The Guilt Trip, which is, I think it's going to pull in an older crowd who are probably going to leave disappointed because there's probably going to be a lot more dick and fart jokes than they're expecting. But then you also are going to have Seth Rogen's audience. Monsters, Inc., which is the family one. Jack Reacher. Tom Cruise killed at Christmas last year with Mission Impossible 3, 4, whatever it was. He fucking nailed it. So, I mean, he's still got that audience. And then this is 40 with Judd Apatow, which I think it looks great. I don't think it's going to do all that well. Like, I think the two movies I'm most excited about aren't going to do that great.
The comedies.
Yeah. And then what's The Hobbit going to do? Do any of these come beat The Hobbit?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you saw it this week where The Hobbit made $88 million. The next one with, what, 7?
Yeah.
I don't think the disparity will be that big this week. I don't think it's going to be $81 million between 1 and 2. But I think it'll be 20, 30 between 1 and 2.
Okay. What do you think comes in? What do you think of all these opens with the most?
Here's the sad part. I'm going to say it's Monsters, Inc.
I think Jack Reacher.
That would be what I think would be second, or would be behind Monsters, Inc.
Those I think it's Jack Reacher because Finding Nemo, I feel, is a bigger movie than Monsters, Inc., and its re-release didn't do all that great. I think, and with, you had Rise of the Guardians, which is doing okay. You had Wreck-It Ralph. You've had these family movies that are doing well. So I think that palette might be cleansed to where people don't feel like they have to go out and see a movie that they've probably seen on DVD 30 times by now.
I'm just counting on that it may not be up to them. The kids may say, I want to see Monsters, Inc. in 3D, so damn it, that's what we're going to do. But I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if Jack Reacher, you know, was second. I think those are really the only two that have a shot, really, at catching the Hobbit and his buddies. Do we want to set over-unders on any of these?
No, because I don't even know where to start. Because you're looking at a five-day weekend compared to a three-day weekend.
How about we take like a disparity between number one and number two?
See, I don't even know where to go there because I don't know what I don't really know what The Hobbit's going
to
do.
That's okay. I won't put you on the spot. We don't need to do it every week. It doesn't have to be a thing. I just thought I'd ask.
I mean, all right, go. Okay, let's go. Guilt Trip, Monsters, Inc., Jack Reacher, This Is 40. Your order is Monsters, Inc., Jack Reacher. What's third and fourth out of those?
I'll take This Is 40 and Guilt Trip.
All right, I'm going Jack Reacher. I'm going to go This Is 40, Monsters, Inc., and The Guilt Trip.
Okay. Neither of us are going to remember.
Nope.
And bring it up next week, so whatever.
Oh, yeah, what are we doing? We're banking episodes. We're not even going to talk about box office next week.
No, it won't be. Yeah, it won't be. Yeah, spoiler alert. The next 2 weeks, Dave and I are just going to record as soon as we shut it off here. So
we're about to get into that. I was going to explain it.
Oh, well, I wasn't going to.
Anyway, well, I might as well now because we are at the end. We are at the end.
Show you how the sausage is made.
It is the holidays, so this is our last live episode. I say that in air quotes. So, and we realized Golden Globes came out this week. If you follow that. I meant to mention it at the top of the show. Yeah, we didn't tackle Golden Globes because next week's episode.
We're gonna
next week's episode. We're gonna hit Golden Globes. We're gonna hit The Blacklist, just released yesterday. So we're gonna tackle that, and we're gonna update everybody on Fantasy Film Ball since we have Golden Globe nominations out. So next week will be no news and trailers, and then the week after that's our year end. It's our last one of 2012.
Probably be a short one, relatively.
We'll see.
Okay, Dave's got a lot of things he wants
our,
to say
it's our
about
it's our favorite movies of the year and our most anticipated of 2013. So we won't actually be talking to you live for a couple of weeks, but you know, still get in touch with us. You can get us at email, Twitter, whatever.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you want to talk to Dave live, you sure can. At Movies On Up on the Twitter. Facebook will still be there, provided the Mayans aren't correct. It'd be facebook.com/moviesonup. You can send us an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. Before we put a bow on this one, do you want to give the folks, because I see that you do, you actually wrote something down.
I got three this week.
Oh, well, it's you know, two movies that I want to see for yeah. very different reasons.
I got three. It's a big DVD day today, December 18th. Awesome day for DVDs. Sleepwalk With Me, Mike Birbiglia movie, awesome movie. Pitch Perfect, Anna Kendrick movie, awesome movie. And The Good Doctor came out on DVD today. Orlando Bloom, Riley Coe, really, really good movie. So that's three just on DVD today.
This one, not on, it's on DVD today. It's been on DVD for quite a while. It's from 1977. It was a good year for me in film. I guess Star Wars came out that year too. And they also made a cartoon version of The Hobbit, which I think I've talked about at some point on this podcast before, but it is straight from the book. There's really nothing extra been infused into it. So if you just want to know what happens in The Hobbit, you can watch this flick from 77, get everything you need. And I do think it's a pretty good representation of the book. So, you know, if you want a Hobbit without all the frills and bells and whistles, check out this one from 1977. We've kind of told you how you can get a hold of us. It's Twitter at Movies On Up, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you know, you can interact with us via our website, moviesonup.com, or moviesonup@gmail.com. David, how can the folks get a hold of you?
Hit me up at Dave Bissell on Twitter, or I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's at Eric and Dave on Twitter, Eric with a K, or ericanddave.com. Also, think of your year-end lists. Mail them to us. Yeah, we're going to do ours in a couple of weeks, but I'd like to do a show first week of January where we go over a listener one. So you have, 3 weeks to do it? So get them to us by the, second or third of January?
And yours will probably be cooler than ours because, you know, we, spoiler alert, can't put Django on there because neither of us have seen it yet and won't have seen it by the time that episode goes live.
Yeah, so...
you can.
But yeah, send us your list because I'd like to do an episode where we focus on our listeners' tastes and what their best of the year was. So I think that's it for me.
Well, that's it for me too.
Until next week, keep it up. It's the end.